has expanded upon her statement of yesterday following the convictions in the Stevens trial and is now explicitly calling on the senator to step down from his seat.
Governor Palin calls for Stevens' resignation. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Tuesday, the 28th of October. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, Alaskans are getting out early to vote.
The reports I'm receiving from the regional office is that it is very, very steady. And there are lines. They're not as big as Florida, but we do have lines from time to time throughout the day.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by Alaska Business Monthly, giving voice to Alaska business, and by Condor Airlines, offering nonstop service to Frankfurt from Anchorage and Fairbanks between May and September, with connections to most German and European destinations. Details available at condor.com.
Governor Sarah Palin is calling for Senator Ted Stevens to step down because of his felony convictions. A Washington, D.C. jury found Stevens guilty yesterday of lying on his financial disclosure forms about gifts worth more than $250,000. As APRN's Libby Casey reports, Palin joined her Republican presidential running mate John McCain in calling for Stevens to resign.
Governor Palin said Tuesday that she hopes Senator Stevens will, quote, do the right thing. Her spokesman, Bill McAllister, said the governor thinks Stevens should resign, even if he wins next week's election.
She has expanded upon her statement of yesterday following the convictions in the Stevens trial and is now explicitly calling on the senator, regardless of the outcome of the election Tuesday, to step down from his seat to remove the cloud over Alaska.
Palin said Alaskans are grateful for Stevens' decades of public service, but the time has come for him to step aside. The governor's call for Stevens' resignation goes farther and is more direct than her initial reaction on Monday, when she said that the verdict, quote, shines a light on the corrupting influence of the big oil service company that was allowed to control too much of our state. But on Tuesday, Palin threw her weight behind running mate John McCain. He said in a written statement Tuesday morning that Stevens has broken his trust with the people and should step down. The presidential candidate said his Senate colleagues should be, quote, spurred by these events to redouble their efforts to end this kind of corruption once and for all. McCain and Stevens have sparred over the years as McCain has criticized the earmarks Stevens defends, and they hold divergent views on drilling in the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge. McCain wasn't the only presidential candidate calling for Stevens to step down. The Democratic Party's candidate, Senator Barack Obama, also said Stevens should resign. He called the federal court ruling a verdict not just on Stevens, but on the, quote, broken politics in Washington. Stevens came out fighting after Monday's verdict, saying he plans to travel to Alaska this week and campaign. He put out a press release Tuesday citing some endorsements, but momentum is growing against him. Senate Republican leader Mitch McConnell said Stevens will be held accountable so public trust can be restored. The Kentucky Republican is locked in a tight Senate race right now and is getting hit by his Democratic opponent for past alliances with Stevens. The chairman of the Republican Senatorial Campaign Committee, Nevada Senator John Ensign, did not defend Stevens, saying this is a reminder no one is above the law. He said in a statement he was disappointed to see Stevens' career, quote, end in disgrace. However, some of Alaska's top Republicans are speaking out on Stevens' behalf. Senator Lisa Murkowski and Congressman Don Young have given him their support. Murkowski said she looks forward to having justice served through the appeals process and said she plans to continue standing with Stevens. So has Stevens' longtime friend Daniel Inouye, a Democrat from Hawaii, who said in a statement that he's saddened by the jury's decision, but that it might not be final, subject to appeal. He called on Alaskans to continue believing in Stevens. Inouye testified as a character witness at Stevens' trial. Stevens also got supportive words from some fellow Senate Republicans. Pennsylvanian Arlen Specter said Stevens is honest, and Virginia Senator John Warner called Stevens a hero. Ultimately, it will be up to Alaska's voters to decide next week what Stevens' political future should be. In Washington, I'm Libby Casey.
The Division of Elections does not yet know if Senator Stevens will be able to cast a vote for himself next week because he's now a convicted felon. State Division of Elections Director Gail Fanumiai says it comes down to the definition of moral turpitude, which is defined as conduct against community standards of morality and honesty.
looking into whether or not the charges that Senator Stevens has been convicted of are felonies involving moral turpitude, because under state law, somebody who's been convicted of a felony involving moral turpitude, voter registration is canceled.
Finumia says there's also a question about when a federal conviction goes into effect, whether when a verdict is handed down or at the time of sentencing. Stevens was convicted yesterday, but he won't be sentenced for a few months. The Division of Elections is working with the state's Department of Law to determine Stevens' voter status. Regardless, Stevens is still allowed to cast votes in the Senate and remain a member. It would be up to the Senate to remove him from their ranks by a two-thirds vote. Stevens could be sentenced to 35 years in prison, although it's questionable if he would see any time behind bars. As an 84-year-old first-time offender with a strong background of community service and stellar character witnesses, the judge is likely to be lenient. Stevens plans to appeal the case. If Senator Stevens wins re-election next week and then resigns, Alaskans would replace him by a special election. However, just when and how that special election would take place is in question. The state's law governing replacing senators was changed twice in 2004 by ballot initiative and by the state legislature. They disagree about whether the governor would appoint an interim senator until the special election. Previously, the governor could appoint a replacement to fill a vacancy in the Senate seat, but voters changed the rules after Governor Frank Murkowski appointed his daughter Lisa Murkowski to take over his Senate seat in 2002. Voters across the nation are recognizing the importance of the elections next week, and they are responding. Washington State, using its vote-by-mail system, is forecasting better than 80% turnout. And in those states where it's allowed, people are casting their votes early, 1 million of them in Tennessee, 1.25 million in Florida, and 1.5 million have requested early ballots in Ohio. Alaska has also seen a very solid turnout in advance of the precincts being open, although the numbers are much smaller. Elections Director Gail Finumia says 5,500 people voted in the first 4 days the early polls were open, and that compares to only some 10,000 in all of the early voting period 4 years ago.
As of 4 days into it last week, we're over halfway to the total number that voted early in the general election in 2004. And the reports I'm receiving from the regional office is that it is very, very steady. And there are lines. They're not as big as Florida, but we do have lines from time to time throughout the day.
For a small example, she says the Nome election office had one person vote early during this year's primary election. This past week, they've already had 48 people cast early ballots. Finumia says some early and absentee ballots will be counted differently for the upcoming election. She says the division found evidence that several people had voted twice in the primary election, once in the early voting period and also on election day at the polls. That's a Class C felony with a maximum 5-year prison sentence. For the general election, the voter lists at local precincts will reflect early voters through October 30th. After that date, early ballots will be held. She said the intention is to count every ballot, no matter when it is cast, and to prevent any duplicate voting.
And the only true way we can do that is by waiting until after we have done in-person voter history from other precinct registers that are people sign in on election day, and we can run a duplicate voter report as we are reviewing and logging absentee in person and by mail ballots and pulling any ballots from voters who did go and vote more than once.
Finumia says the Division of Elections has given the Criminal Division of the Department of Law the names of those they believe voted more than once in the primary election. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, the Denali Commission looks to changes for funding future rural Alaska projects.
Should every community have every kind of facility, or can we combine facilities into some regional solution?
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by BP, proud to support public broadcasting in Alaska. Didn't quite catch that report? Want to hear it again? APRN can be heard on the web at www.aprn.org.
University of Alaska Fairbanks political science professor Jerry McBeth says Stevens' conviction will not overshadow everything the senator has done for the state.
I don't think so. It will certainly be a factor. As Aristotle said, one swallow doesn't make a spring. This is one part of his career, and certainly not all of it.
Macbeth is not writing off Stevens' re-election bid despite the guilty verdict. He says Stevens' extended record of garnering federal support for Alaska programs has generated loyalty that transcends the conviction.
Many people have told me that they would vote for the senator even if he were convicted. I suspect he'll have a very hard fight to pull through a victory next Tuesday. Would be hard indeed, but not impossible.
Macbeth says if Stevens' Senate tenure is over, that factor combined with the economic crisis could make for rough times for Alaska.
I cannot measure the billions of dollars of difference it will make in state funding over the next several years. But yes, it will make a clear and decided difference in state funding. And while oil prices are reasonably high as they are now, it's not a problem. But when oil prices dip, as they may, below $30 a barrel, then we may be in for having to develop our own fiscal plan in Alaska, which is overdue.
Macbeth says the situation will be exacerbated by Governor Sarah Palin's partisan transition since being named the Republican vice presidential nominee. Former state legislator Ray Metcalf has actively tried to keep governmental ethics in the public eye since he filed complaints with the U.S. attorney, the state attorney general, and the federal grand jury in June of 2005. He says he feels vindicated, although he says Stevens' conviction is only half of what he has wanted. He is now looking for others in Anchorage's power structure to fall.
I think that a good old boy system is about ready to come tumbling because the suit of armor they had is going to turn on them and start ratting them out.
No legal action has ever been taken based on Metcalf's complaints, although Metcalf attempted a recall action against Ben Stevens and ran for office against Ted Stevens, who was the subject of later Metcalf complaints. He says he will continue to fight corruption until people can run for office without having to take bribes or compete with people who are taking bribes to get elected.
None of this would be possible without the people in the background behind the curtain, pulling the strings and slipping the envelopes under the door. And those are the people. If you don't get those people, the only thing that will change is who gets the graft.
Metcalf says that Stevens is at the top of a political pyramid that has been active in Anchorage business for at least 30 years. Convicted felon and former Fairbanks Mayor Jim Hayes wants a new trial. Defense Attorney John Murtagh says a judge should have rescheduled the trial of Hayes so his wife could have testified about her central role in stealing more than $400,000 from social service grants. Jim Hayes was convicted of helping siphon federal grant money for his wife's mentoring center and hiding the thefts through money laundering. Hayes and his wife, Chris Hayes, are serving time in separate federal facilities in Texas. Murtagh unsuccessfully asked last winter that Jim Hayes' trial be postponed until his wife, who had already pleaded guilty, was sentenced. He has asked the U.S. Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals to overturn Hayes' conviction. John Cowdery's retirement from Senate seat O has created an increasingly sharp-toned race between a Republican House representative and a Democrat who is a former two-term Anchorage Assembly member. KSKA's Len Anderson reports.
Cowdery had held state Senate seat O since 2000, but this year, poor health and a federal indictment stemming from the FBI's ongoing political corruption investigation forced the long-serving 78-year-old Hillside Republican into retirement. The two candidates battling to take his place are Republican Kevin Meyer and Democrat Doug Van Enten. After serving on the Anchorage Assembly, Meyer became the Lower Hillside District 30 representative the same year Cowdery moved to the state Senate. It was also in 2000 that Democrat Van Enten began a two-term, six-year stint on the Anchorage Assembly. At candidate forums like the one held by the Anchorage Chamber of Commerce, Meyer cites his legislative experience in the House, his role on the Finance Committee, including as co-chair, and his involvement in several key pieces of recent legislation. A top subject is long-range energy plans.
We saved over $6 billion of our surplus so that when the energy coordinator brings forward energy projects at the beginning of next session, we can hopefully fund some of those, as well as we put $250 million away into a renewable energy fund.
Meyer wants to delve again into the proposed Susitna hydroelectric project that was abandoned when oil prices fell in the 1980s. On KSKA's running program, Meyer said completing a gas pipeline was more important than any particular route.
We have four different projects for the gas pipeline. We need to keep them moving so one of them does happen, whether it's the bullet line or if it's a Port Authority or AGA or Denali.
Besides energy, Meyer's campaign touts his district service, especially in roads, recreation and trails, and educational support, the last both statewide and within his district. On energy, Van Etten says Alaska needs to look beyond oil and an eventual gas pipeline for its own renewable energy needs. On running, he listed an assortment of South Central Alaska alternatives.
Here in the Anchorage area, wind power on Fire Island has been one proposal. The proposal for hydropower across the inlet and for geothermal across the inlet are things that are proposed that will all benefit the rail belt.
Van Etten prefaces his list of legislative goals by noting Juneau cannot control the price of gas or other day-to-day goods.
But we can rein in NSTAR's proposed huge rate hikes. We can elect officials who do not have conflicts of interest. We can join most of the other states of the nation by funding preschool education and a broader range of technical education and training opportunities.
He also advocates for public transportation both within Anchorage and between the city and the valley. The most stinging rhetoric of the Senate O race revolves around influence and ethics. During campaign debates, as well as in a recent phone conversation, Van Etten attacked Meyer on what the Democrat regards as a professional conflict with his legislative duties. Van Etten points to Meyer's oil company employment.
We've only got 20 seats in the state Senate. Can we afford to have one of them directly representing the oil industry? And Mr. Meyer's voting history shows definitively that he votes in their favor.
That's just totally false. For one thing, I voted for AGEA 2 years ago. The oil companies did not like that process. And then, of course, when we approved TransCanada as the recipient under the AGEA license, you know, I supported that as well.
Van Etten says those were lopsided issues, with so many in favor that Meyer could vote for those two items without incurring oil company wrath. Meyer, in turn, points out Van Etten's past problem with the Alaska Public Offices Commission during his third and unsuccessful campaign for the Assembly.
You have received the biggest fine for APOC violation of any Assembly member. I think the fine was over $12,000.
Van Etten responds that he's paid the fine and the matter is done. He says it's a non-issue.
Especially considering that the fellow who is your campaign finance chair was the person that filed that APOC complaint.
He says the base problem was he forgot 1 year's permanent fund dividend check to his wife, as well as inadvertently mishandled what he says is her complex second-generation trust fund. Van Etten says everything has been properly filed for this election. This is Len Anderson.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company, and by
Grant Station, finding grants for nonprofit organizations, schools, and governmental agencies throughout the U.S. and Canada. Grant Station, fast track to funding. On the web at grantstation.com. APRN will be providing special coverage of the 50th anniversary of Alaska statehood. For sponsorship information, call 550-8400.
A spokesman for the Alaska Department of Corrections says John Carlin, the gunman in a notorious Alaska killing, has been found dead at the state prison in Seward. Corrections spokesman Richard Schmidt says Carlin was found dead under suspicious circumstances Monday night. Carlin was convicted of conspiring with Michelle Linehan, a former Anchorage stripper turned soccer mom in the 1996 shooting death of Linehan's fiance, Ken Lepink. Lepink's body was found off a trail south of Anchorage. Prosecutors say Linehan and Carlin orchestrated the killing in the mistaken belief that Linehan would receive Lepink's life insurance money. Linehan was arrested in 2006 in Olympia, Washington, where she was living with her husband, a physician. Linehan was sentenced to 99 years and is in the Highland Mountain Correctional Center in Eagle River. She is appealing her conviction. Corrections spokesman Schmidt says Carlin's death is only the second homicide to occur within the state's prisons. The first was in 2004, also at Spring Creek, when convicted killer Carl Abuhl strangled his cellmate Gregory Bedouin. The Department of Fish and Game closed doe hunting season on October 1st on Northeast Chichagof Island. The decision was unprecedented. The closure came more than a month earlier than last year's closure of the same area in November, and 2 months before the department closed down hunting for does in the entire game management unit comprised of Admiralty, Baranof, and Chichagof Islands. Area management biologist Phil Mooney says two hard winters in a row, following several years of mild winters, high deer abundance, and overforaging, all contributed to the crash in the population. Mooney spent a week in August working on the road system in the closed area between Tenneke Springs and Hoonah.
And in that whole week, we saw 20 deer. We were able to dart and collar a yearling doe. She was in excellent shape, weighed about 70-some pounds, got a collar on her, and then came back to town and talked to the Forest Service biologists and ranger to kind of look at, say, you know, please keep collecting additional information from people that you hear that are out there hunting. But we had already heard from a number of people that, yeah, we're seeing some deer, but we're a little worried.
Mooney says department records indicate an early doe closure was considered for Northeast Chichagof only once before in 1992, but it was never implemented. The Denali Commission, an independent federal agency, is now 10 years old. The commission has built infrastructure such as teacher housing, clinics, and fuel tank farms throughout rural Alaska. Now the commission is looking at significant changes to the way they fund projects. Diminishing federal dollars and the outmigration of rural residents raises concerns of sustainability for expensive systems. George Kanellis is the federal co-chair of the commission. He spoke with me yesterday. Kanellis says the commission is adopting policies and making them available for the public to comment on.
Where these policies are going is we've always had a good track record of listening to local folks and focusing on village solutions. But what we're hearing is there's a need now for real regional solutions, more long-term solutions. So, for example, in energy, in addition to or instead of focusing on small solutions, let's look for connectivity. Let's look for ways that we can connect places. That's one idea. And we're also going to give more priority to partners that can help with the funding as well. We see federal dollars continuing to decline, and that's an issue that everybody's concerned about.
And there are some fundamental things that will be changing, such as geographic proximity to other projects, population thresholds. Can you give us some examples of what these changes will be beyond just that, and why they're necessary, why they're needed now?
Well, one of the tough issues for us, for example, is the duplication of facilities. So where you have communities, say, on the road system, and they're close together, what's the right answer? Should every community have every kind of facility, or can we combine facilities into some regional solution?
Are there other things that stand out that you think folks would want to be aware of at this time?
Everybody's concerned about rising energy costs and the anecdotal evidence of people on the move. And that's a great concern for us, too. I mean, one of the bedrocks of American democracy is the ability to live where you want to, live where you're able to. And people throughout history have always moved towards opportunity. But the issue for us is, are people moving because they want to or they have to?
So is a big concern of the commission right now what we're hearing about this outmigration from rural Alaska, what we know about this outmigration from rural Alaska? Are commissioners concerned about building infrastructure and then having people leave town?
Yes. Yeah, that's a real concern. And we've had a good track record so far of scaling the size of, say, clinics to match a population. But this gets really tricky in small places. And the last thing we want to do is be part of a problem where we're building something that isn't maintainable over the long term.
you have a sense of how this may impact smaller communities that already have few resources to compile documents and support? How will this impact people who are already stretched for putting together a proposal? It seems like this will kind of step up the bar that they have to meet.
Yeah, it's always been tough for small places with limited capacity to put together sophisticated proposals, and the commission's been on guard for that too. We recognize that part of our mission is capacity building, so we try to balance the approaches from large places as well as small places. So, for example, in the transportation program in our early years, communities, say in Southeast, that had bonding capacity, we would add our funds to theirs, and we've built some really good harbor projects in Southeast as a result. But at the same time, the very small places that can't afford the lobbyist or write a good proposal, we've got an open door policy with, and I think we've got a good track record with as well. And we also listen pretty closely to the regional nonprofits and their sense of priorities in their region.
George, what are some of the other changes that you see on the horizon for projects going forward in rural Alaska?
I'd like to see more emphasis placed on really good, I'll call it green design, that is truly energy efficient and truly combines uses. We're talking with partnering with the coal climate housing research folks up at the university, for example, who are doing some great work in thinking about better methods for housing.
You mentioned that there are fewer federal dollars, and where is the Denali Commission funding at currently, and where do you expect it to be in 10 years or 20?
10 years ago, the commission started with a funding level of about $20 million, and we rose, thanks to Congress, to about $140 million, and we're currently at about $110 million or so. But we are dependent on the generosity of Congress year after year, and frankly, it's not a good way to do business. If there's agreement that the commission is a good business model, then we've got to find a better way to fund it.
George Kanellis is the federal co-chair of the Denali Commission. The proposed policies are available online for a 30-day public comment period. You can find them at denali.gov. And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at aprn.org. We had reports tonight from Dan Brass in Fairbanks, Len Anderson in Anchorage, and Robert Woolsey in Sitka. APRN's Libby Casey reported from Washington, D.C., and Dave Donaldson from Juneau. Our audio engineers are Gooseberry Peter and Dave Waldron. John Prophet is our webmaster. Our managing editor is Duncan Moon. And I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by the Alyeska Pipeline Service Company, operating and maintaining the Trans-Alaska Pipeline. Wells Fargo, providing personal attention from people who live and work right here in Alaska. Wells Fargo, the next stage. The Alaska Engineering News Fund, whose contributors include Dowell HKM, providing civil and transportation engineering, land surveying, and planning services. On the web at dowellhkm.com. And by
First National Bank Alaska. Branches in 18 communities around the state and on the web at fnbalaska.com. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.